Chapter 7. The World Tuned Upside Down. The room seems to spin. I concentrate very hard on not throwing up on the headmaestro's expensive-looking shoes. "Perhaps I ought to explain further," she says. "You see, a young lady, also by the name of Amelia Jones, a remarkable pianist of uncommon skill, entered our Los Angeles auditions 2 months ago. Then, a few weeks later, she embarked on a yachting trip with her parents in the Maldives. Tragically, a storm capsized their boat, and everyone on board was lost."
"Oh," I say in a very small voice, "that's terrible. That poor girl." For a moment, I forget all my worries, and instead imagine this other Amelia Jones, terrified for her life as waves crash all around. While I was worrying about my audition, she was drowning. "This occurred the same day the Mistwick acceptance letters were sent out via a finding spell," Mrs. LaRue explains. "And I imagine when this letter," she waves the paper that I've treasured like gold, "was unable to find Miss Jones, the other Miss Jones, it found you instead." "A terrible misunderstanding," says Miss Nurani, "made possible only by the most extreme of circumstances." I don't know what to say. I can hardly think straight, but I know what this means. I'm only here by accident. I was never supposed to be here at all. I should have known. I should have seen this coming a million miles away. After the audition I had, why would they want me? My face flushes with embarrassment that I had ever imagined I might be good enough for this place. All those years devoted to a single dream, only to have it taken away from me twice in one summer. First, the disastrous audition, now this. I can't even begin to think about how I'll tell Gran. But then, my heart skips a beat, and I curl my hands into fists. Why should I have to tell her anything at all? Why should I have to go home? I came all this way, and I know I can be good enough. Maybe not now, but if they just let me try, I could get better. I could be what they want me to be. I could do or become anything if it meant being a part of Mistwick. This is the first time in my life that I've felt this close to my mother. It's like her presence is here, in the walls and in the trees and in the light glittering on the lake. This was the place she loved best. And if there's anywhere in the world I will discover more about who she was and who I am, it has to be here. I look the headmaestro in the eye. "If the other Amelia Jones isn't coming," I say, "then that means there's an available spot." In the silence which follows, Mrs. LaRue winces. "Well," says Miss Nurani, hastily stepping in, "that's true, but that spot is technically for a pianist, not a flutist. And besides, there is a waiting list."
"And you're not exactly at the top of that list,"
grunts Mr. Pinwhistle. His hand goes to his mustache.
"I remember your audition, young lady. And I don't remember many auditions. Disastrous. One of the worst I've seen."
I swallow hard. "I can do better, I promise. Just give me a shot. I'll prove I'm good enough."
"That's not how it works,"
he replies.
"Mistwick has a reputation for finding the very best, most talented young musicians in the world, and you are not—"
"Mr. Pinwhistle, that will do," Miss Nurani cuts in. "Amelia, I'm sorry, but this is out of our control." I start to feel tears, but I blink them away. I will not cry in front of them. I won't let them think I'm a pathetic crybaby, in addition to being the worst audition they've ever seen. "Aren't you all in charge of this school? Why can't you just let me try?" "This school has traditions that have been here far longer than us," says Mrs. LaRue in a stern voice. "It has functions we cannot control."
"Such as those annoying humfrogs in the lake,"
says Mr. Walters.
"And the squeaky doorknob in my office that's always spelling itself shut and locking me in,"
grumbles Mr. Pinwhistle.
"And the echo trees,"
adds Miss Becker.
"And the order in which students are granted acceptance to the school,"
finishes Mrs. LaRue. Something niggles at me. I frown, looking out the window at the forest. The echo trees.
Is that what they're called? Miss Nurani arches her eyebrows.
You've seen them?
I heard them too, I say sadly. They're like living music. We played canon together. The maestros all stare at me. Mrs. LaRue presses her hand to her lips.
You played a spell with the echo trees?
She asks in a very soft voice. I shrug. They asked me to, or someone did. I heard a voice telling me to play for them, so I did. I'm sorry if I wasn't supposed to. I'm not really sorry, though. If that's to be my only good memory of this place, then I'm not sorry at all. Maybe I'll sneak back there and play again. What can they do, kick me out twice? All the maestros are looking at me like I just admitted to some terrible crime. I didn't hurt anything, did I? It was just a little music.
To be clear, says Miss Nurani, you played Pachelbel's Canon in D at the edge of the Echo Wood?
I said I'm sorry, I mumble. They look at each other, then back at me. Then Mr. Walter says,
do you think?
And Miss Nurani replies, we have to check. I look at each of them, confused. What did I do? But it's like no one hears me. They turn to each other instead.
This is completely unforeseen,
Mr. Pinwhistle says.
The whole situation, it's unprecedented.
Yes, replies Miss Nurani, but this is a school of musiccraft. Our mix-ups generally do have odd and unpredictable consequences.
I guess I'm the odd and unpredictable consequence she means.
Well, we'd better see what the damage is, sighs Mrs. LaRue.
Mr. Pinwhistle, Mr. Walters, and Miss Becker excuse themselves in order to get back to the other students, after making Miss Nurani promise to fill them in later.
Fill them in on what, I want to ask.
Miss Nurani and Mrs. LaRue lead me out of the office and down the stairs. We stop at another door, this one locked tight. Mrs. LaRue opens it with a large key, and then we're walking onto the grass behind the school, near the amphitheater I saw earlier. Ahead, the Echo Wood waits in silence and darkness. The air is much chillier than it was when the Zeppelin arrived, and I shiver despite my jacket. I don't understand what's wrong, I say. I didn't mean to.
Hush now, orders Mrs. LaRue. We will see what we will see. Miss Nurani?
Miss Nurani nods and holds up her viola, striking a quick tune that produces three bobbing spheres of blue light. One hovers over each of our heads, lighting the grass around us as we walk. When we reach the edge of the trees, the maestros begin looking all around. They walk this way and that, illuminated by their glowing blue light balls, while I stand there like a dummy with no idea what they're doing. I hug my flute case and wait, tapping one foot. Whenever I move, my little light moves with me, casting dancing shadows all around. Overhead, a gentle breeze curls through the canopy, and the faint music hums and then fades, like violins testing their strings before falling silent. A brief dusting of magic lights the trees before dissipating. Then Miss Nurani shouts,
here!
Mrs. LaRue and I hurry over to where Miss Nurani is pointing at something on the ground. I don't see it until I step around her, and then I gasp.
Recognize this? She asks me.
I nod, unable to believe my eyes. That's my audition tree. Bent sideways, I'd recognize it anywhere. It's a little taller than it was 6 weeks ago, yet it's just as crooked, stuck forever in a low bough. But it looks healthy, even if it is shaped funny. It has more leaves now, and they're green and glossy, shining in the blue light suspended over us. The soil around it is fresh and damp, like it was just planted there. It's an echo tree? I ask.
Yes, replies Miss Nurani. Echo trees are special. They thrive on music.
But most important of all, adds Mrs. LaRue, they protect the school and everyone inside. You see, their natural music is canon, a summoning spell. Many people think Pachelbel composed it, but really, he only recorded it after discovering a grove of these trees.
And when you change a summoning spell to a parallel key, in this case D major to D minor,
it reverses and becomes a repelling spell, I whisper.
The trees change key?
Yes. The moment any unwanted visitor sets foot in the forest, they're repelled.
She reaches out and puts her hand against one of the bigger trees, smiling up at it.
Better than any electric security system.
She says electric like it's an affront to magic.
So, how did my tree end up here?
You put it there yourself. She points to a building I'd not noticed before, a large greenhouse that reflects the moonlight. We walk over to it and find the door hanging open. Inside are rows and rows of shelves, and on the shelves are a lot of small pots, each holding a little echo tree.
I notice right away that most of them are very straight and perfect, the way little echo trees ought to look. Not at all like mine.
Miss Nurani hunts down the shelves until she finds an empty spot.
Here it sat, she said, until you played the tree's summoning spell. Then it would have flown out and planted itself with the other trees.
Tomorrow, says Mrs. LaRue, we will hold a grand planting ceremony in which all the new students will add their trees to the echo wood.
Miss Nurani nods.
Every tree in the forest represents a student of Mistwick, most of them long since graduated.
So, somewhere in this forest is a tree planted by my mom.
What about the rest of these little trees? I ask. There are a lot more than 100 here.
Well, we never throw them out until we're certain who will be in our new class. There are often a few dropouts just before the term begins. That's why we don't send rejection letters till next week.
Which is why I never got one, I mutter. Well, unless you're going to rip up my tree, I guess at least a part of me will always be here. That's something anyway.
The maestros exchange a long look, and then Miss Nurani takes my hand in hers.
Amelia, she says softly, I don't think you understand.
Understand what? I know I have to go home.
She shakes her head.
Like we said earlier, not everything in this school is ours to control. By planting your tree in the Echo Wood, you've come under the forest's protection. If you leave the school now, your tree will wilt, and the protective barrier around the campus will weaken, making everyone inside vulnerable. There are only two ways to safely leave Mistwick for good: by graduating, or by being expelled, either because you chose to drop out or because you broke enough rules.
Mrs. LaRue nods.
And expulsion is a difficult process. It takes an entire orchestra of maestros playing very complicated and taxing spells to forcefully remove a tree from the wood. We only do it when absolutely necessary, for it causes a great deal of strain on both us and the forest.
I lick my lips, my heart seeming to stand still. So, what are you saying?
I'm saying, Amelia Jones, that accident or no, you're a part of Mistwick now, and you're not going anywhere.
I'm not? I suddenly feel lighter than air, like I could float right up into the sky.
At least not yet, Mrs. LaRue adds, and my stomach sinks a little.
I will make a deal with you, Miss Jones. I will give you 2 months, in which you will participate in all your classes and activities as if you were a normal student. And at the end of those 2 months, if you pass an exam I myself will administer, then you will be allowed to stay on, for good. But fail that exam, and you will be expelled, so that another, worthier student might have your place.
She exchanges a look with Miss Nurani, who nods in agreement.
Well, Mrs. LaRue says, extending one elegant hand toward me, do we have a deal?
I stare at her hand a moment, but I already know I don't have to think twice about my answer. If it's a perfect musician they want, then it's a perfect musician they'll get. I shake the headmaestro's hand.